Good evening and welcome to a special Halloween edition of the Michael Brandt Show, the place where no one, not even your jizz-stained copy of the Necronomicon, is completely safe. Seriously, guys, you need therapy. And Jesus. Mostly Jesus. Tonight, we're going to shine the light of truth onto some sky-high scary stories. So sit back, buckle up, and come fly the spooky skies with me. You're gonna love it. As always, I'm here in an undisclosed location against my attorney's advice and violating several UN resolutions just to be here for you. Tonight's episode is brought to you by none other than Rusty's Razor Company. Perfect for committing seppuku in the lukewarm bathwater of your shitty apartment, or for stuffing into all your Halloween candy this year. Blades come pre-rusted and pre-contaminated with the blood of our enemies. Rusty's Razors. Whether you're slicing across your wrist for attention or up for results, Rusty's is right for you. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, it's now Halloween, or at least pretty close to it, depending on when you're listening to this, and I've been pretty busy working on my human centipede costume that I've been weaving from the skin of my victims. But don't worry, folks, they're all homeless people, so nobody's gonna miss them. Trust me. But as busy as I may be, I'm never too busy for you, dear listeners. And since I didn't want to leave you guys out in the cold, I thought I'd drop a quick episode in the Halloween spirit and then get back to sobbing in my closet naked with a jar of peanut butter and an endless supply of my own tears, as is my tradition on pretty much every holiday. So you guys should know by now that as a completely normal adult, I get extremely aroused by planes, as does everyone, I'm sure. In fact, just about every time I see one, I get a pretty massive ploner. That's plain boner for you lame-ass normies out there. And I'm sure all you guys do too. But, being Halloween and all, I thought I'd briefly share with you guys some true tales of horror at high altitude, sure to turn your plain boners right into fear boners. But first, the news. This one is coming to us from IFLScience.com, the story of the smartest dumb people on planet Earth, really. Remember that really coolly named OSIRIS-REx program? This is the program that NASA spent a whole shit ton of money on to send a probe to the asteroid Bennu and take a sample and then bring that sample back to Earth for analysis? Well, NASA, in conjunction with my very favorite evil corporation, Lockheed Martin, shout out to you guys, managed to launch this obviously unmanned probe to the asteroid way back in the halcyon days of 2017. Once the probe landed on the asteroid, it then spent almost 2 years, 505 days, give or take, analyzing the surface of the asteroid before taking a sample from its surface. No word yet on if they played that Aerosmith song and had Ben Affleck in a spacesuit pretend to drill into the surface. I'm guessing not, but, you know, you can always hope. Anyway, they managed to gather the sample and actually get it back to Earth a couple weeks ago. Only one problem, though. The sample, weighing roughly 60 grams, is stuck in the sample box and they can't figure out how to open the damn thing. Apparently, two of the screws are stripped out. I should mention here that the program itself cost just a hair under $1 billion at approximately 983.5 million American doll hairs. And it's all for naught because they can't get a couple of screws out of a box. Apparently, no one there ever heard of an easy out. To be fair, it's a little bit more complicated than that. The sample container is in a nitrogen-filled box, and any tools they use have to fit inside the box to avoid contamination. Yeah, that's right. Not only did all of NASA not anticipate a goddamn strip screw, but they built their work box too small to fit any real tools inside of it. Just brilliant. Like, you just know there's some grizzled old guy there that's just been like a mechanic there since the 80s, and he keeps telling them to just drill it out, and all the brainiacs are like, yeah, okay, Gary, we know what we're doing, we're scientists. And Gary is just over there pulling his hair out, smoking cigarettes, mad as hell at being stuck with all these smartasses just waiting for his retirement. Anyway, great job, NASA. Seriously, $1 billion for 60 grams of space dust and you can't even open the box. You know, for $100, I can get you 1 gram of space dust that'll send you up through the atmosphere. Allegedly. Moving along into some archaeology news. Is it Indiana Jones or Indiana Moans? You decide. A group of archaeologists unearth a 7.5-foot statue of a man clutching his penis at one of the oldest temple sites in Turkey. They also managed to dig up one of a large wild boar. Hopefully the two statues aren't related, but like, you know, who am I to judge? Archaeologists unearthed the large sculpture of the man holding his dick at the site of Karahan Tepe, about 22 miles from Göbekli Tepe. It depicts a 7.5-foot tall man, this according to a translated statement from Turkey's Ministry of Culture and Tourism. The person's ribs, spine, and shoulders are particularly pronounced, and the person may actually be depicted as being dead, the statement said. Because, you know, why not make a statue of a fully erect dead guy? No word yet on if the archaeology team managed to unleash some sort of ancient dick-related curse upon themselves and the rest of mankind. But stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. I assure you that any and all news of dick curses will break here first. And finally, in what NASA has dubbed an orbital oopsie, their words not mine, believe it or not, a NASA astronaut accidentally lost his tool bag while conducting a spacewalk. Apparently, NASA is yet to develop the far-flung, super-futuristic sci-fi technology that is rope. NASA says the tool bag is unlikely to, quote, recontact. Apparently that's nerd speak for smack the shit out of something, because why not spend your time making up words instead of tying off your goddamn tools? No word on if Chris Brown is likely to recontact Rihanna, though. It seems, by the way, this is far from the first time this has happened. Apparently those cartoon-like spacesuit gloves aren't really the best for fine motor skills. So let's give it up for NASA. Alright, so it'll be a quick one tonight, ladies and gentlemen, as I really need to finish up stuffing those used syringes and Rusty's razor blades into these candy bars before the party at the nursing home. So, you've heard of ghost ships, right? You've heard of haunted houses. I mean, who hasn't? But what about ghost planes? Hear me out. So the year is 1999. It's a simpler time. You're going about your day, jamming to No Scrubs by TLC on your Sony Discman stuffed deep in the pockets of your Abercrombie & Fitch denim jacket. You're feeling like $1 million and smelling like CK1 on your way to the mall to check out the hotties that you'll never have the courage to talk to, all while sipping that sweet orange Julius at the food court. Who knows? Maybe you'll stop by Spencer's and get a Dawson's Creek poster to spruce up your room. Life is good. It's a few days before Halloween and you're walking into the front entrance of the mall with your birthday money in hand, right after your mom dropped you off, and you hear a plane overhead. You look up and you see a small, probably private jet flying overhead. You think to yourself, wow, is it the Backstreet Boys? Jennifer Love Hewitt, perhaps. Must be fucking nice. Someday I'll have one of those, you think. I just got a promotion at the Blockbuster. Things are looking up. But what probably never crossed your young and still hopeful mind is that plane overhead was no normal flight. In fact, half a dozen corpses just flew over the top of you, haunting the skies as they cruised at several hundred miles an hour. That's right, flight N47BA was a ghost flight. Dead air. Flight DOA. Wait, did I just come up with the coolest idea for a movie ever? I'm pretty sure I did. If any of you are listening who have, like, talent and connections, let me know. We'll make this thing happen. Anywho, back to dead air. So flight N47BA was a business jet flying from Orlando, Florida to Dallas, Texas on October the 25th, 1999. On board were some fairly well-to-do golf people. And sorry guys, I'm way too poor for golf and by extension too poor to come up with any golf-related puns. On the doomed flight were PGA legend Payne Stewart, a former football quarterback Robert Fraley, president of Stewart's golf agency Van Arden, and Bruce Borland, a golf course architect from the Jack Nicklaus Company. There were also two pilots, Michael Kling and Stephanie Bellegrieg. Sadly, this would be the last swing they would ever take at flying high. And yeah, I'm really trying here with these folks. After a successful takeoff and climb to 7,000 feet, air traffic control radioed the pilot and they acknowledged radio contact with no issues reported before climbing to their cruising altitude of 39,000 feet. This was the last time anyone ever heard from flight N47BA. Approximately 6 minutes later, the tower again attempted to contact the ill-fated flight, but, unfortunately, they were never heard from again. Increasingly concerned calls from air traffic controllers went unanswered. On the radio was just dead air. I'm getting so good at these, don't you guys think? I'm honestly very impressed with myself. With that, the Air Force was alerted, and an F-16 Fighting Falcon scrambled to intercept the jet. The pilot of the F-16, Colonel Olson, reported back that there was no visible damage to the private jet and it was flying in a straight line. He also stated that he could not see into the cockpit as the windows appeared to be fogged up. During the next few hours, the Air Force scrambled not one, but two more intercept flights and began considering shooting down the plane as it headed towards Canada. Speaking of our northern friends, then Prime Minister of Canada, Jean Chrétien, wrote in his memoirs that they had authorization to shoot the plane down had it entered Canadian airspace. No word on if they were planning to shoot bottles of maple syrup at it or maybe dispatch a particularly vicious flock of Canada geese. Fortunately for Canada and its geese, the flight only had about 4 hours of fuel on board. And when the tanks ran dry and the engine shut down, it was over a field in South Dakota. The plane threw itself into a death spiral. Sequel title to Dead Air. Have your people call my people. It was hurtling itself towards the ground at almost supersonic speeds before crashing in said field, producing what I can only assume was a badass plume of fire and smoke that briefly took the shape of a screaming skull. The investigation later concluded that shortly after takeoff, and due to an unknown event, likely Canadian assassin geese, air pressure was lost in the cabin, and for one reason or another, they did not manage to activate the emergency oxygen supply, causing everyone on board to asphyxiate and eventually die. At some point, the autopilot function was engaged, however, and that kept the plane riding the skyway to hell. Dead Air 3, Skyway to Hell. Damn it, I'm good at this movie shit. Netflix, holla at ya boy. Anyway, there's now a memorial in the clearly extremely haunted field where the plane crashed, and Stewart was inducted into the Golf Hall of Fame after the crash landing in the birdie from hell. See, I told you I'm really bad at these golf puns. So from ghost planes to the infinitely more disturbing ghost birds, let's take a gander at the work of some fun-loving, and no doubt super-duper normal, scientists over at the University of New Mexico, shall we? From the dawn of time, man has looked to God's feathery creations and dreamt of harnessing their power of flight. History is rife with daring men and women who tried, and pretty much universally failed, to mimic the mechanics of birds' flights through the skies. But no need to do that anymore, as we have things like, engines and wings, and we've had them for a while now. Either not content with the status quo, or, more likely, looking for an excuse to play with dead animals, these creepy-ass science boys have decided to spend their days reanimating the corpses of our fine-feathered friends and turning them into fucking surveillance drones because we live in a dystopian hellscape. You ever seen those schizo posts where the tweakers are claiming that birds aren't real and they're all government surveillance drones? Yeah, well, it turns out the meth head living behind the dumpster might just be onto something. Now, the scientists are claiming, by the way, that use of these absolute nightmare fuel fucking creations will help them monitor bird populations, for example, without disturbing the flock. Which, one look at these things will tell you is the most egregious lie ever told, because dear God are they disturbing and about as natural as Bruce Jenner's tits. Side note, by the way, I would absolutely touch Bruce Jenner's tits before I'd touch one of these Frankenstein-ass birds. In fact, I'd touch Bruce Jenner's tits. That's another story. Anyway, by sticking a series of motors, circuit boards, and batteries up the bird's cavities and connecting them all together, they have managed to create a remote-controlled abomination that I dare say is on many levels far worse than a predator drone. I'll leave a link in the description so you too can have trouble sleeping at night. Unrelated, but I'll be concealed carrying an 8-gauge shotgun filled with rusty nails anytime I'm outside from now on. Thanks, scientists. Alright, so have you guys ever been on a cargo plane chartered by a mysterious shell company, possibly linked to the CIA, heading towards a third world nation with millions of dollars of unmarked currency, and when you land, there's blood everywhere on the plane and a dead guy on board? Has that ever happened to you, or is it just me? I guess it's just me. Me and these totally not suspicious gentlemen here. You see, way back in the heady days before COVID filled the air and the reanimated corpses of dead bird drones filled the sky, when the only real danger above were the countless drone strikes the outgoing President Barack Obama was dropping all over the Middle East, smacking the shit out of anything that moved with a Hellfire missile or two. A totally normal, definitely not suspicious MD-11 cargo plane was just landing in Zimbabwe at Harare Airport for a little bit of fuel before continuing on its, once again, completely normal journey. When the plane landed and began to taxi, the ever-vigilant ground crew noticed a whole bunch of blood coming out of the landing gear of the plane. Now listen, I'm no planeologist, but I'm fairly certain that it's not normal for planes to bleed. I don't think they get their period, but, you know, citation needed on that one. Concerned with the copious amount of blood streaming from the forward landing gear, the ground crew pretty quickly raised some alarm bells. The local authorities quickly dispatched the Zimbabwe police to investigate, and what they found raised all of the eyebrows. You see, lodged in the landing gear of the plane was the body of an unidentified man, minus a right arm. Apparently, the man attempted to stow away on the flight, and perhaps he was tired of flying Spirit and just wanted an upgrade. Who knows? Unfortunately for the would-be stowaway, it turned out that he was not Wolverine and did not in fact possess bones made out of adamantium, because when the landing gear retracted into the aircraft, his arm was still on the outside and the mechanism severed it, spraying blood all over the fuselage and ultimately leading to the man's death. The crew were reportedly unaware of the man, his body, or the bright red blood stains all over the nose of their aircraft. The crew of the aircraft, by the way, was actually quite inclusive, for those of you who care about that kind of thing, consisting of a South African, a Pakistani, and of course, two Americans. Because whenever there's suspicious and inexplicably dead bodies in any sort of bizarre circumstances, you can rest assured there's an American or two nearby. So remember when I said that flight was entirely normal and not suspicious or strange in any way? Alright, well, that may have had a little bit of sarcasm to it. You see, the flight was loaded with millions of South African rands stacked on pallets. Now, rands aren't exactly British pounds, but they're also not, you know, Japanese yen either. At the time of the incident, a million South African rands was worth approximately $62,000. Unfortunately, we don't have anything even resembling an estimate of how many millions of rands were on board. But we do know that the MD-11 is a pretty spacious aircraft and could likely have held the equivalent of millions of US dollars. The plane, owned by a company called Western Global Airlines, was leased to another company, Network Airline Management, and was apparently chartered to deliver the cash to the South African Reserve Bank. I'm assuming they did not count on the corpse situation because the plane was immediately impounded by Zimbabwean authorities, including its cargo. Western Global Airlines is actually still in business today, by the way. At the time of this writing, they appear to be facing millions in fines and bankruptcy, but none of that's relevant to this story. What is relevant is that they have a long history of being chartered, not just by normal companies and such, but also by the military and, you know, you guessed it, some of our favorite three-letter agencies. And those agencies have certainly spent a lot of time using airlines, such as the CIA's famed Air America, to ferry drugs and money and God knows what else all over the world. You ever wonder how those pallets of cash got to places like Iraq and Afghanistan to pay off tribal leaders? Well, this is how. Now, I don't have evidence that this particular flight was chartered or run by any agency in particular, mind you. But what I do find curious is why was the Central Bank of South Africa getting its own money shipped to itself via Germany? And while we're asking questions, I do have to wonder why the poor armless bastard chose to stow away on a plane bound out of Germany. You know, people desperately trying to escape a shithole country like, you know, I don't know, Haiti or Portland, Oregon, are known to take drastic measures to get out and start a new life somewhere far less terrible. But Germany doesn't strike me as the kind of place that you'd be that desperate to escape from. Well, at least not now anyway. You know, maybe back in the 30s or 40s and your name ended with Steen or something, you know, yeah, it was a little different. Did the man have an idea of the plane's cargo and was planning on executing the most epic heist ever? Was all the relevant information released to the public? Well, I'll give you a hint on that last one. No, it wasn't. We do know, however, that Zimbabwean officials worked with the South African Reserve Bank on returning the funds, but did impound the aircraft for quite some time. No word on if they took a few rands as a finder's fee or not. I sure as hell would have. Well, that about does it, folks. I hope you learned something tonight, and I hope that something is that nowhere is safe, birds aren't real, and don't dismiss your local tweaker's meth-fueled ramblings, because he just might be onto something. Don't forget to check us out on Instagram at The Michael Brandt Show, and on X at MBrandt Show, or email us at themichaelbrandtshow@gmail.com. As always, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. That really does help me continue to make this content, and shoot me a message if there's a topic you'd like to see me cover. So take care, be well, and always remember to live, laugh, and hand out your expired prescription meds with the Halloween candy. Keep those parents and the paramedics on their toes. So long, everybody, and as always, I hope our names are touching on the watch list. Good night.